Red Grange joined us immediately after his last collegiate game against Ohio State.
Yeah. And you say Shot City.
I'm coming home again.
Quick pitch to Walter, looking for the record, cuts back, he's got it, he's out of it at 25.
The Bears are who we thought they were. And that's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass.
You know, they say that money calling, that money on the phone.
Forget it. Nobody's going to get him. Long gone. Devin Hester, you are ridiculous.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to Bears on Tap. You can go ahead and follow us at Bears on Tap. Also, go ahead and follow On Tap Sportsnet for all of your Chicago sports needs. I'm Lucas Perfetti. You could follow me at LucasPerfetti46, and I'm also joined alongside by that pod guy, Duke Coughlin, and at BeatOn300, Brandon Suarez. Gentlemen, you know, we have our Tennessee Titans soft preview, but I want to start this off a little bit differently. I'm going to play you and the listeners just the post-game post-game press conference from Matt Nagy, because it was – I'll let you listen.
Matt, can you tell us what you saw on the Wims fight and what was explained to you and what you just think about that behavior in general?
Yeah, I did not see it. I totally missed it. I was looking down when I heard about it. But what I did hear is what it looked like, which is completely unacceptable. We've talked to him and told him that that's not how things go here. One of Javon's strengths is his character and who he is as a person. And, you know, he's since apologized, but you don't have that. There's no part of that in this game. Again, I still haven't seen it, but from what I heard, it's not good. So that's not how we roll here. And we'll be talking to him.
JJ.
Matt, on that play, it took you from a second and on that play where Wims of the fight, it took you from a second and five to a second and 20. Nick got intercepted on that pass. How did that change your play call that you thought you were going to get when you're looking down at your sheet, thinking it was second and five, then all of a sudden you got to go to second and 20?
Yeah, it's brutal. You know, you come out in the third quarter, and we've struggled all year long in the third quarter. And, JJ, I mean, you can totally understand the question you just asked. You go from second and five to second and 20. That's hard. You know, that's hard. So what I don't like is you come out, you know, it's a tie game, and you have an opportunity to do some things, and we go the other way. And then on top of that, we have that stuff that goes on. So I felt like it took the sting out the fire for a little bit. We had to regroup. The defense, at least in that situation with the field position, was able to hold them and not let them score touchdowns. But we had to regroup offensively on the sideline and just let these guys know, like we're, you know, let's go get on track and get out of that. And that's kind of why we were with that.
Jason.
Matt, how long have you been thinking about or working on that kind of role for Mitch? And is that something you could expand in your offense going forward?
Yeah, we could. You know, Mitch, a lot of credit to Mitch. He's done a really good job at in his role that he's in right now. And it's a weapon for us to be able to use his legs and then all, obviously be able to throw the ball as well. So that's something that we're looking at. And every game could be a little bit different, but it's something that teams have to prepare for.
Adam Hogue.
And Matt, whether it was the Wims fight or some drops or penalties, some more confusion, look like pre-snap sometimes getting plays. And I know, I think at one point the helmet went out, but just in general, it seemed like discipline was maybe an issue throughout this game and some unforced errors. Do you agree with that? And can you pinpoint why that continues to be an issue?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. You're right. There is issues there. That's what bothers me. And that's what pisses me off is that there is that issue still going on. Excuse my French, but you know, we're reading it from a wristband. So, you know, I just, I'm struggling with that right now. And it's getting you into a hole. It's called, you know, and so that has to change. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I can't sit here and say anything other than what you just said. When you have somebody throwing punches, when you have the things that are going on right now with us in the offense and just trying to get things going, guys are fighting, they're sticking together. But then you have that happen. It takes away everything that you work hard to get to and fight for. And what bothers me is we got a lot of good guys that are doing things the right way. And then it takes it away.
Jeff Dickerson.
Yeah, man, to kind of follow up on that, how do you feel about the offense in general today? I mean, there were some really good moments. You had that four-play, 80-yard drive, and you aired out to Mooney, and, you know, great catch by A-Rob there for the touchdown at the end. You know, Dick leads you guys back and force overtime. But how do you couple that with all the other issues you kind of just discussed, you know, that stuff that seems like is kind of maybe holding you back sometimes offensively?
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at the run game, and I thought it felt better today. It did feel better, and that team's pretty good against the run. It did feel better in the run game, so I was happy in that aspect. You know, and we were able to have, I think we had a couple double digit drives where with plays, 13 play drive, a couple other ones, and so the rhythm of being able to get into rhythm was good. We did have one, you know, a couple of those three and outs where that's hard. And then again, the start of that third quarter, I don't like, and it's been a theme. So trust me, we're looking at it. We've done different things in how to adjust that. And it's weird that it just keeps happening. So, but yeah, you're right. It's I did feel better about a lot of stuff, but none of that matters because you want to win.
Kevin Fishbane.
Matt, when you guys got the ball back in the third quarter, I think it was your third drive, you had the third and three, David came out short, and then Nick tried to call draw him off sides. For you as a head coach, what's going through your mind at that point, your third possession? You talked about the struggles. I mean, how kind of much did you just want to stay out there and just try to sustain a drive at that point?
Yeah, I mean, I knew we weren't going to go for it there on fourth down. We're just like Sean did to us at the end, trying to get us to jump off sides and try to steal a free first down, and that's what we were doing. We tried to pop a run on that third and two, third and three, just to steal a first down, which we've done. We did a couple times today on third down, and that can keep a defense honest with some of the things they do, and you can hit some. We didn't hit that one, and so unfortunately it made it into that fourth and one, fourth and two. And your field position wasn't real good. And then also that wind at that point in time was kind of kicking in our face. So it just, that one hurt a little bit.
Stacey Dales.
Coach, you appear to be very emotional. None of us can understand what it's like to be in your position. What kind of emotions are you feeling right now going through this process, to give us a perspective of how difficult this is in a pandemic against a really good team and you're, you know, fighting for your life, so to speak?
Yeah, I would say the frustration comes just because I want it so bad for these guys. I want it for the city. I want it for our organization. And I care a lot about all of that I just said. And so it's emotional at the end of a game when you fight like this and you're playing against a good football team and a Hall of Fame quarterback and they're a good football team. So to lose like that on a last second field goal in overtime, there's positives that you take out of it. But again, it's always better to coach off the wins than it is the losses. When we reflect at where we're at right now, I know no one's happy and we're not happy. But what we got to do is, fortunately for us, any way you look at it, we ended up winning these five games early on. And so now we got to figure out, okay, are we going to start going against each other? Or are we going to stick together and fight through this thing? And I know what we'll do. It's just, it takes time. And then anytime you lose two games in a row, that part hurts too. You know, we don't want that. We don't like that, but we got to rely on the leaders right now. In times like this, this is times, in my opinion, when the leaders of your team, they step up and they say, all right, enough's enough. It's go time. And that's where we're at right now.
Thank you.
Yep.
Pat Finley.
Matt, you guys have leaned on your defense all year. You know, when it gets to overtime and they allow two fairly substantial drives, what did you make of their performance and the ability to get home or the inability to get home to Breeze when rushing the pass?
Yeah, there's a few plays here or there that I know that they'll want back, but we feed off of our defense. That's just, you know, let's face the facts. That's who we are. That's who this team is. We feed off of how our defense does, and I'll never question or get on those guys in regards to what I think they're doing or not doing. I'm proud of them. I think they play hard. And again, they're going against a really good offense today and a great quarterback. So I'm going to rely on them, continue to keep listening to what their suggestions are and where they're at. They're going to keep fighting. Chuck and the coaches are going to do the same thing. And then we as a unit collectively, all three phases can only follow, you know, and just keep, but I'm proud of them. And I know they're going to want to always play better, but we got to just keep plugging along.
Couple more for Coach Jason Leisure.
Matt, offensively, I look at this and it seems like one of your better games. It seems like progress possibly. Is your frustration the fact that you see those flashes and there's a disparity between what the offense could be and what it consistently is?
Yeah, I think you're right. That's what it is. And It's hard for me to try to figure that thing out. It's hard because we're all trying. And, you know, we talked about just cutting it loose and just having fun and not playing tight and doing that. And there was a lot of times in that game I felt where, we were doing that. And, again, I'm just going to continue to go back. I'm really, really bothered by that third quarter incident. That bothers me. I'm being completely honest with you guys. It bothers me. And so, but I am proud of the guys that played hard. I'm proud of the guys that were selfless and tried to do everything they could to help us win.
Adam Hogue.
And Matt, understanding that you had a few guys out on the offensive line, how do you, I guess, judge what Nick is doing? Sometimes it just seemed like he was retreating a lot, moving backwards a lot, sometimes throwing as he's moving backwards. How do you judge how much the offensive line is causing that versus situations where maybe he can step up and handle it better? And in general, how did you feel like Nick Foles played today?
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's hard for those tackles if you do keep back on. And I'm not saying, cause it's again, like in my shoes, when I'm out there calling plays and doing different things, I can't see all the exact details of that until I watch the tape. And I know Nick is trying his damnedest to be able to push up in the pocket and do different things. But that is a big part of this. And he'll be hard on himself on when he's doing it and not doing it and where his eyes are at, when the ball's coming out, what the accuracy is of the throws, his decision-making, et cetera. And then when the throws are being made, you know, are we making catches? Are we protecting? It all needs to be in unity. And right now, there's just a little bit of that off, which is a reflection of how we're going right now on offense. There was a couple drives in there, and that one where, I mean, let's face it, he made an unbelievable throw on that deep post to Mooney and followed it right back up with a great throw and a trust to A-Rob, and A-Rob made a spectacular catch. That felt good for us. We needed that, and that's what you want to kind of feed off of and like, okay, now we can get going. Now we can play ball. That's us. That's who we know we can be, all of us together. And so is it going to be perfect? No. Guys, I mean, look at the Saints. I mean, you look at what they did offensively, and there's times where they weren't perfect and things weren't great. But, you know, they won the game, and they did enough when they had to. So we just got to – we got guys that, they want it. And when you want it, you just keep plugging away. And I know it feels – it's hard, but – trust me, we want it for everybody. We want it for you guys. We want it for us. We want to win. We want to win. We want to win. And we're not going to stop until we do, getting better at fixing everything.
Last one for Coach Dan Wiederer.
Matt, how significant was the wind on the field today? And then late in the first half, you guys had a chance to go up 17-3 and stalled out inside the red zone. Anything about the end of that series that sticks out to you when you think about it now?
The wind, number one, was at times it was kind of swirling. At one point in time, I thought it was going left to right. And then literally 30 seconds later, I said to the coaches, I think it's now going right to left. So it was kind of back and forth. But I didn't think it affected the throws as much as I thought maybe going into today that it would. And then that series there, like you said, to be able to go up 17-3 instead 13-3. Again, we feel like, you know, in the red zone, that's where we have players that can be, you know, good threats and put it together. And so, yeah, that's that one there. And then again, at the end of the half, knowing that we're getting the ball to start the third, and we gave up that touchdown there to make it, we were doing a great job on D the whole time. And then they just kind of chunked away and got that touchdown at the end. I thought that was kind of big too.
Thanks, Coach.
All right.
So, gentlemen, what's your first reaction to that? Duke, I'll start with you.
Yeah, dude, that's brutal. There were so many situations to so many questions, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend all the questions were great, but I am going to sit here and say that all of those questions could have been answered simply by saying the offense is behind where we want to be. We're not helping the defense out. And that starts with me as a head coach. Like, any bit of accountability would go a long way with Matt Nagy. And it just continues to be either he throws a certain situation under the bus, whether he's talking about the wind. And in case you guys didn't catch it, he literally talked about how the wind changed from left to right and right to left instead of him admitting that he was wrong about how the wind was in the first place. Like, that is how gung-ho this guy is to not admitting that he is wrong. And when he wants to sit up there and he wants to point blame at a guy like Nick Foles because Nick Foles calls plays off a wristband, something Nick Foles has been doing his entire career, when he has gone out of his way to sell us on the fact that Nick Foles is the guy that he wants running this offense, he just seems to be talking himself into circles. Like, I'm not totally understanding what this guy wants from anybody at this point. And whenever you ask him about it, it turns into everything's fine. Everyone wants to win. All these guys are winners. These guys put in a lot of work. They try really hard. Yada, yada, yada. Like,
Matt Nagy, a little bit of a Trustman vibes there, right?
Yeah, dude. It's literally, we're getting the same old quote, dude. And I used to love when Trustman would say it. We're going to go back to the tool shed. We're going to, because this guy's got all the tools in the toolbox. Like, that, the worst quote of all time. And we're just getting that. We're getting that instead of a head coach just taking accountability. Like, hey, we're in year three of this offense. We are not where we want to be, and we need to get there. And that starts with me as a head coach. You know, and I'll let you guys take it away of some examples of some coaches that do take that accountability.
Yeah, no, I do. I for me personally, like, I think there's a couple things that struck me about, you know, what you noticed the most, and that was the communication with the wristband type thing. Figure it out, right? Communication is literally your number one job, is to communicate what you want and what you need from your players. So if you are not able to communicate that, then, I mean, what the fuck are you doing? You know what I mean? Like, that's your job. And if you think about really good coaches, Bill Belichick communicates. And if you ever hear about anyone that talks about Bill Belichick that used to play for him, they knew exactly what they were supposed to do and what their responsibilities were. And it doesn't seem that everybody on the Bears offense, not just the offensive line, but how many times has Anthony Miller been thrown under the bus for running a fucking stop route 2 yards too shallow or 2 yards too deep and an interception and blah, 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 blah. Like, realistically, at some point, maybe this fucking offense is just too complex for everyone. You get what I'm saying? Like, maybe 2018 was so good because he thought he needed to simplify things for Mitchell Trubisky, but it worked for everybody. And then he thought he was going to get more advanced, and he just doesn't have everyone from fucking Harvard. Like, Ben Broniker is gone. So, and there's another thing too. I really think, like, that lay on the grenade thing is something that he needs to work on, because just like we said with Bill Belichick, or we said with Mike Tomlin, Bill Belichick will fucking put Cam Newton in place to score a touchdown. He'll fumble it at the 4-yard line. And Bill Belichick will say, I got to coach better. Mike Tomlin, every single time something bad happens, he says that he fucked up, and you don't get that from Matt Nagy. But B-Don, go ahead. Look, what was your impression of it?
So, yeah, my thing, and just with knowing a lot of head coaches at various different levels of professional football and college football, these are guys that will literally and figuratively take a bullet for their players. And for us to have a head coach that week in and week out is like trying to explain to his wife how he's not cheating on her while he's blatantly cheating on her is like the only analogy that I can come up with. Like, at the end of the day, you got to nut the fuck up. You got to take responsibility for what you've done. And again, at the end of the day, he's not out there playing, so there is some sense on the players to go out there and produce. But your job as the head coach is to put your players in the best possible position to win, given their skill set. For example, my Huskies are going out there tomorrow with 44 freshmen on the roster, okay? 44 freshmen figuring it out. They're going to figure it out. There's a lot of them that are starting. I called for one to be my player of the game. You don't put those people in those position if you don't trust in them and believe in them to win. So for me, Matt Nagy needs to own up the responsibility. He needs to realize that regardless of whether he wins football games and the Bears make the playoffs or not, he's not going to get the respect that he deserves or wants until he gives us the Don Dada, until he gives us the Super Bowl. So he needs to just get back in the lab, continue to work towards that goal. And when things don't go his way, he needs to take a page on Mike Tomlin or Bill Belichick's playbook, and he needs to take the blame, even if he knows deep down in his heart it's not his fault. It's kind of a shitbag thing to say from my perspective, but it's the right thing to do as the head coach and the representative, mainly, especially with the media, because players don't have the same access to media as the head coaches do. The head coaches have their scheduled weekly conferences and all that shit. So they're the main representative and main spokesperson for the team.
Yeah, dude. And to kind of piggyback off what you were saying about, you know, holding yourself accountable, you know, I think that's just the biggest thing with it. Going back to that wristband debacle, the fact that he said how pissed off he was about the wristband thing just screams everything wrong with what he's doing right now. Because let's look at it. Let's be realistic about it. Matt Nagy, being the offensive guy who has to have things the way ran that he wants to be ran, allowed this to happen. He allowed Nick Foles to call plays off of a wristband. He allowed that to continue to happen week after week after week. And now all of a sudden he's pissed off that that's how plays are getting called. Why was this not fixed? Why was this not addressed already? And if it was addressed, why the hell is your quarterback still calling plays off a wristband? So,
yeah, like, why do you find out about it at halftime? Like, how are you just figuring out now that it's not working? Like, at the end of the day, you need to adjust, right? Because you got a quarterback that was essentially a system fit, and it doesn't look like he's a system fit, but you have to adjust to him at some level. This guy has ran and excelled in a system similar to yours multiple times, and he looks like realistically he's making rookie mistakes. And I can't put that all on Nagy. But at some point you got to lay on the grenade for your squad. And to me, dude, the main impression I got from everything, especially the whole wristband thing, just completely dejected and just like seems like he's defeated, dude. You know what I mean? He doesn't. And I get it. He just came off of a loss and it was a tough loss because, you know, you think the kicking fucking thing, he even mentions it. It's like, wow, that's great. Cairo Santos, the wind fucking changing direction didn't affect Cairo Santos. So why would it affect? I don't understand.
You know what I mean? That man could kick from a goddamn Navy ship that's moving on the ocean and hit a goddamn goalpost 200 yards out. That guy is the least of anybody's worries on the
Bears. At this point, no, he really is the least of anybody's worries. You're right. And he's due to miss a couple. So if he does, don't clench too hard because like you can't be perfect on the season. But realistically,
when they're open, I'll take the blame for it.
No, I mean, it's realistic. He's going to miss
it. He's earned them. He's earned some misses.
Exactly. Exactly. Like he would have been the player of the week for special teams. No doubt about it. If the Bears win that game, I wouldn't be surprised if he still comes out as the player of the week. Cause he made some huge kicks. But no, at the end of the day, he just seems super, super defeated, man. He just seems like it seems like he's been trying to make an offense work for 3 years and it's still not working. That's what it seems like to me.
He's trying to fit a square in a round hole.
And it's just like you've pointed fingers at everybody else. Jordan Howard was the problem, but when he left, your running game actually got worse and you had a system fit guy. You know what I mean? Your passing production is going down realistically and you got your system fit guy. So maybe your system is completely dog shit. Is it just possible?
So for me, and I've been getting a lot of flack from my friends in separate group chats that I'm in, just some of my buddies that I've grown up with, because through this podcast and through you two Jagoffs, I have become the Mitch guy in my friends group. And that friends group does extend to Ethan. So think of the level of that. But I made this argument the other day, and I'll make it until I'm blue in the fucking face. Mitch gives us right now a better chance to take the easy yards. We can get our run game back up and running. I know we didn't play the best teams at the beginning of the season, but I have beat this point home like 1,000 times on this podcast, averaging over 140 yards a game. Mitch was running the ball. Montgomery was running the ball. The defense was, in a sense, having to stay honest because they know that at the end of the day, the Bears are still going to try to run the football. Now that they've strayed away from it, they can put 8 people or 7 people in coverage and let their DBs make it absolute hell for our receivers to get open. And that's why you see Nick Foles trying to throw into tight windows and stuff of that nature. And it's tough to say because, especially, and we haven't even talked about it yet, but with the news on the offensive line this week.
Yeah, we're going to get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But it's going to be tough to run the football. They got to find a way. They got to find some way or another. And if it's picking up Spain off waivers, I don't know if he got picked up.
No, he got picked up, dude.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yeah, we'll talk about that because, but I mean,
they got to find a way to run it.
Alex Max just kind of hanging out there, too, as a center. Yeah.
Can you say that?
He's still on the roster or no?
I believe
he's a former first-round pick, correct?
Yeah, I believe Alex Max is still just kind of hanging out.
No, he's not. I don't think he's a free agent. I think there was trade rumors about him because the Falcons might be in sell mode.
You get what I'm saying though. Like you got to take the
100%
this offense and in this NFL, we're never going to be the team that's going to go out and score 28 or 31 every week, but
we got to get easy yards and easy scores. Like we need to get those easy scores, those fucking pick routes where a halfback comes out of the fucking backfield. No problem. Like the Darnell Mooney play was a great play. I'll give him credit. Like I thought, calling the game wise, like actual continuity of the offense, I thought it was probably his best game of the year, other than probably the Panthers. But realistically, it was still dog shit. Like you did better, but it's not, you didn't do good. Because I got to put this to rest real quick. Because it was reported that, like, you know, I don't want to get into the Mitch thing again because we talked about it last episode. Like, it is reported that really the only way they're going back to Mitch is for an injury. So I don't want that to be. He's hunkered in and tied himself to Foles, no doubt about it. So it's for the Mitch people out there, you're not going to see him unless Foles gets hurt, which is a fucking possibility because he's getting killed every single week.
Yeah, my thing is, and although like we talked about like earlier in the week, we killed Matt Nagy for the end of the half, but I'm pulling out my beat on Madden strategy. If I'm in a tight game and I know I get the ball at the end of the half, I'm running clock out. I'm putting a touchdown in with like 8 seconds, and then I'm finding a way to score on that drive. Because if you can stack and crack those two drives, bro, it's hard to find an NFL team that would blow that. But bro,
that's what good teams do. Good teams take advantage of that opportunity.
I don't think I've ever seen that. Like, and I mean, maybe I'm just being an asshole right now, but I haven't seen that in a very long time from the Bears. And I think one thing that going into this matchup against Tennessee, their offense has kind of sputtered in a sense to where we're at in this season. I think this is going to be a game that's won in the low 20s. So you cannot afford to lose those opportunities this week.
Yeah. But what's the status on Mac? Isn't he a part of the Falcons roster?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I was being a jet.
That's fine though. Cause that's, that leads us in. I mean, the Bears didn't do anything at the trade deadline. It is passed. We're recording, you know, at midnight on Tuesday. So, the Bears didn't do anything. Am I surprised? No. Were they going to make a big play for someone? No. realistically, the only thing I thought was a possibility was A-Rob getting traded, but that didn't happen either. And that's something else we didn't highlight on the last episode. Like, he's clearly got something going on, and he's
not happy at all.
He's fucking on the sidelines talking to himself and shit. Like, he's clearly just, like, thinking about, like, man, dude, I had fucking who, Christian Ponder and Blake Bortles and Mitch Trubisky.
I was going to say, no, like, have you seen the graphic? It's like Hackenberg, Bortles, Mitch, Bortles, like, ugh.
Hackenberg, that's the guy. But
AAF quarterback.
You know, we thought that the Bears were going to at least attempt to make a move for a guard or something like that. But let's get into this Titans game, because first I want to preface this, right? We don't know the status of Cody Whitehair. Bobby Massey's going to be out for at least 4 weeks. Now Jermaine Ifedi, who's actually been like a decent fill-in for what they paid him. Jermaine Ifedi is probably our best interior guy now with Whitehair out and Daniels out. Well, now you're missing Bobby Massey and fucking Jermaine Ifedi. So realistically, four of your five guys that you went into the season with, that was already a really thin thing. You don't have fucking high draft capital as backups. Like, the Bears are in a really bad spot, and it's just – it's very surprising they didn't make a trade. When you think about it logically, but maybe that means Whitehair is going to be back soon. I don't know, but to be optimistic about it, the Bengals had four brand new offensive linemen, including Quentin Spain, and they didn't let up any fucking sacks. And if you don't remember, the Bengals, like, Joe Burrow's been getting killed every single game. So they let up no sacks to the Titans. So if there is a game to get right on the offensive line, I do think it's against this Tennessee Titans front. But then again, they just dropped a stinker to a team that's only had one win and a tie. Like, so they're going to come out pissed off. The Bears are going to come out pissed off. It should be a really good game.
Well, I think a lot of it is you have to be able to scheme around a weak offensive line. Like, it is possible. Like, it has gotten done. Like, as pitiful as like an offense like Washington has been, their offensive line has been terrible all year, and they have still found ways to either run the football or get the ball in the air. You know what I mean? To where they're not taking sacks every single down. Like, I don't like this idea that the offensive line, you know, being weak has to be a death sentence. Like, get the ball out of the hand quick. You know what I mean? Like, set up routes that are happening quick. You know, I understand it sucks to try to run the football with a bad offensive line, but I always just go back to like the most elementary thing in the world. Like, if you have a bad offensive line, like say in high school or college ball, like your number one thing is going to have to be running the football, because that's where it starts. Like, if you can't block the run, good luck blocking the pass, you know? So something has to happen with balance on offense. You know, we have to get creative with, you know, what we're doing to get the ball in space, to get the ball away from defenders, you know, however we have to do that, whether we have to keep extra tight ends on the field. Like, we still have plenty of tight ends. You know, a guy like Demetrius Harris is 6'7", 230 pounds. He can block somebody. Cole Kmet, he can block. You know, like, we have guys that can, you know, that we can load in. You know, sure, that takes away from the passing game a little bit, but when we're losing guys like Javon Wims to suspension and we don't know what the hell Riley Ridley is going to do when he's up anyway, what more do we need on the field than Allen Robinson and Darnell Mooney? You know, obviously you mix in, you know, Anthony Miller in there when you can, but why do we need to consistently have 3-4 wide receivers on the field? Why do we need to have tight ends out in the slot when we can load up the box, try putting a fullback in front of our running back and try running the football? Look what we just did against the Saints team that is good at stopping the run. You know what I mean? And we still had an offensive line that was in shambles for most of the game.
Scoring drive for the Chicago Bears, we ran the ball well. Every drive that points got put up, the ball was ran well, except for in that 2-minute drill at the end. I mean,
and the longest pass play of the year, what was it on? Play action.
And I mean, it's pretty simple, but realistically, the thing, I hate to just shit down Nagy's throat again, but it's like, Mustafer is better right now at center than Coward was at guard. So it's like, maybe this will fucking force them to put some guys in and shuffle some things around and see where it's at. And I know it was only for a second, but there was a second when Alex Bars came in and it was Mustafer, Jermaine Ifedi, and then Rashad Coward at right tackle, which when they did transition him, they wanted him to play tackle, never guard. It was always a swing tackle type thing. But yeah, man, it's just like, that didn't look horrible. And I know it was a teeny tiny sample size, but it's like switching things up, giving guys opportunities that are on your practice squad that are probably watching, looking at your running game every single week in film and just like, dude, I fucking know if you gave me a chance. Like, these guys need a job. They want to get paid. They want to fucking be on a roster. Like, if you give them an opportunity, they might have a little bit more fight in them. That's all I'm saying. So,
dude, it's a COVID year. You know how many offensive linemen that could have been picked up, whether it was a UDFA route or having a real preseason or sitting at home right now? One thing I want to say, not to make it political, but make fullbacks great again. So please make fullbacks great again. The Bears, when was the last time they had a fullback?
Michael
was
it 2018? 2018, when they ran the ball halfway decent. It wasn't great.
The real legit last fullback we had, though, was Jason McKee, though. Let's not slander his
name. Yeah, and Jalen McKee left NIU last year. That was that one I hated to see. They had Spice Adams and Jason McKee out at the same game as me, and I couldn't find them. I don't know how. I don't know how I couldn't find the Spice Man. But I mean, honestly, if you have – issues running the ball and you're only running the ball out of single back sets, you'll run out of heavy sets sometimes. Why not give yourself essentially an offensive linebacker, is what I call him, and a fullback, and an extra bulldozer and a blocker, someone that you know doesn't want the glory of catching the ball or getting the ball on the carry, someone who can go get to the second level, has the
someone speed. That gets their fucking dick hard.
Yes. Like, someone that puts their meat on. All right, I'm done being Matt Nagy about it. Someone that unzips their pants and just goes right on the fucking
table. I mean, me as a lineman, right? I knew I wasn't going to carry the ball ever. My fucking dream was to come out and pull and just fucking clock people the whole way down. Like, that was my absolute dream, is just to fucking assist the running back in. You need to get a guy that gets his fucking kicks off burying people. That's all it comes down to. Like, you need a Terminator. You need a James Conner. That guy can easily – and let's be real here. We're talking about a wish list. Like, they're not going to get a fullback. They're going to use J.P. Holtz as their F and run offset I once a fucking year. But that's just, like, it would be nice to see. And I think we're all
it's
just
like,
kind of –
it's like a chop block, too. It's like J.P. Holtz ankle biting someone.
I mean, bro, like, if we're so fucking, like, allergic to putting Alex Barrs in the offensive line, dude, put him in a fucking fullback. Put a hand in the dirt. Just fucking take him a lead.
I know a guy that's probably sitting in a trailer home outside Hallis Hall right now waiting to get re-signed that could definitely fill that role in Bradley Sewell. So,
bro, like, yeah, exactly. We played Bradley Sewell at fucking tight end. You're telling me that big old boy can't play some fucking fullback? Come on.
I just
I know we went a little meatball there for a second.
No, let's just – No, I get it. I get it. It's just it gets frustrating for us fans and the people that have to cover the team, because it's like we want to see good things happen. And it's at this point, the bar is so low. It's like we're not saying like you have to ever have a game where you throw five touchdowns. Just like fucking if you have a lead,
find a way to win.
Capitalize. Yeah. Capitalize on that halftime situation where it's like good teams. You know, if it was the other way around. There's no doubt if New Orleans is in that position, they're going up 17-3 and then they're coming out and then going up 24-3, because that's just what good teams do.
Yeah, dude. And with another thing with the offense is like if this isn't working, why not try new things? Why not try new players at different areas of the team? Like we were like Matt was so quick to make that quarterback move, but we have not seen that move on any other position.
Yes, that's another thing. Was the first step, and I think Rashad Coward is going to be the next one as soon as they get healthy, to be honest. Because right. Matt Nagy needs to take accountability himself, but he also needs to hold players accountable. This fucking trotting the same guys out every week is dog shit.
Exactly, dude. And, you know, I know that might sound weird to some people who just heard us talk about, you know, him throwing people under the bus. But, like, that's the entire thing, dude. Don't say it in an interview. Don't talk shit about a guy. Don't say that Nick Foles is wearing a wristband and that pisses you off. Like, dude, just make a change. Try something different. You know what I mean? That way the guy that you sit down understands that, okay, I'm being held accountable, but he's also not trying to blame me for everything that's going wrong. You know, it's a situation where you still have that respect from the player by sitting them down, because if somebody plays better ahead of them, then they realize like, okay, maybe there's a reason I got benched, you know?
Yeah.
Why not? What, like, I know we said this last week, but what do we have to lose at this
point? Well, the biggest thing is, like, if he can't even communicate with his, like, is he, like, are things being communicated to the offensive line properly? You know, I have faith in Juan Castillo, but, like, if he can't communicate plays with the wristband with his quarterback after a few weeks, like, what's going on at Hallis Hall? We really don't know, you know, but it seems like there has to be some sort of communication issue, because really, it seems like there's missed assignments on every single play. And there's way too much shooting yourself in the foot. It, you know what? People want to say that, like, the penalties mean undisciplined. I can't say that's undisciplined, right? Like, I can't put it on Matt Nagy that fucking – that Nick Foles and Dave Montgomery and Ryan Nall all seem to be not on the same page, like, at that specific time. Like, if the play gets called, Nick Foles has to take it from there and make sure everybody's set.
You can put it on Matt Nagy that Ryan Nall's even in the game in the first
place. That's true, though. But that's on them. Like, if you have the play called in and you're a veteran quarterback and you see that, like, Charles Leno was screaming at him to hurry up. Like, we heard it over the air. So that's on Nick Foles 100%. But the other things, like, just personnel, it seems like we rotate in guys late. We're taking 25 seconds to run a play. Like, get your fucking play in. Have a fucking plan, dude. Like, hey, if this gets no yards, we're going with this next. If this gets fucking 13 yards, we're going with this next. Like, there's no reason when you're in a 4-minute drill that it should be taking you 20 seconds to get the fucking play in and have these guys be up at the line of scrimmage. They should be at the line of scrimmage, like, ready to fucking go right away. And I think that's 100% on the coach. But, like, some of these penalties, like, on the defense, Akeem Hicks for fucking chasing somebody down and hitting them, even though the whistle wasn't blown, but they want to call forward, like, progress, whatever. That's fine. Like, I can't say that that's them being undisciplined or head coaching for them playing hard on defense, because defense gets bullshit flags all the time. But shit like that, breakdowns where you just can't get your shit back together for a fucking quarter and a half, like, that's 100% coaching.
Yeah, man. And to kind of pick up off of one of those points, you know, I think one of the big things we used to talk about with Mitch all the time was the fact that he couldn't read a defense. And now we're kind of seeing a lot of these, you know, delay of game situations with a guy like Nick Foles, because this offense runs so much with motions and pre-snap kind of things that happen. When that play is getting in late, that takes away from time where these motions that have to happen can't happen. So I could see a situation where, you know, you have a player on the offensive line that's telling Nick to hurry up, but inside Nick's mind, he's like, fuck, I still have to get this guy motioned over, you know, everything like that. I still haven't even read the defense to where it's that point where he has to take a timeout. And that's not.
They didn't even take the timeout. They just took the fuck. And I get it. Like, you can't really take the timeout there, but like another mismanaged situation. They were trying to get the Saints, you know, he even mentions it in the press conference. They were trying to get the Saints to go off sides when they were in their own territory, but they don't have the timeouts to burn. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? Either get out there and run the play or punt it, because you're wasting 40 fucking seconds and taking a delay of game, backing yourself up more in your own territory, possibly getting a fucking block punt. Like, Saints are always pretty solid on special teams. That's Sean Payton's thing. So to me, it's just like, I mean, fuck, let's just get into this Tennessee game, because we can go on about how big of a fucking jag off Matt Nagy is all day long. So let's just move on to the Tennessee Titans, because realistically, they're going into Nashville. Like I said earlier, you know, we have a lot of problems on the O-line. We don't know who's going to start. Really, the only one we know that's starting for sure is probably, you know, well, at least from the original five, is Charles Leno. So realistically, the Bears are kind of in shit there. But as I said, the pass rush is not getting there. It doesn't matter if Jadeveon Clowney's there. Pass rush is not getting home for the Tennessee Titans. And every game they've been in seems like a shootout. Now, they could put up fucking points, and they got Derrick Henry, who's an absolute load. And we're actually just entering Tractorcito season. So, I mean, fuck, the guy can go off for 200 yards. But realistically, I think this game is winnable like the Saints game. You know what I mean? Just like the Rams game was too. So the Bears need to tighten up, because we saw this happen last year. They were 3-1. You know, they had a heartbreaking loss in week one. They rattled off three in a row. And then what happened? They fucking took a downspin. And it's like it's happening this year. Sorry, I got to get back to Matt Nagy. Last year, you remember, he kept saying, well, we're 3-1. Well, we're 3-2. Well, we're 500. Well, now you're one. You can't say that. How many weeks can you say that for? So after this week, you're going to say, well, we're above 500. Like, no, you had an opportunity to possibly get a fucking number one overall seed and get the only bye in the NFC. And you just fucking let it slip through the cracks in like such an ugly fashion. But realistically, Tennessee is a beatable team. I'll leave it at that, Duke. Take it away.
Yeah, man, I 100% agree. I think a very beatable team, especially where they're at with their season. A guy like Ryan Tannehill, I think you look at his numbers and you kind of like kind of take a step back because like they kind of jump off the paper, but a lot of that is set up with a guy like Derrick Henry. And if Derrick Henry is a guy that can be even halfway contained, that forces the ball into a guy like Ryan Tannehill's hands where he has to beat us. And I think that's really our best chance to really win this game. You know, yeah. Trying to avoid the Matt Nagy thing. At the end of the day, yeah, we are 5-3, but that still does leave us open to where we can go on another winning streak. You know,
2 weeks ago, we were 5-1.
Exactly, dude. Like I know obviously everyone just heard us go on a fucking tangent and everything like that. And that will happen, but the season's far from over. Definitely far from over. There's definitely an ability to go on the road and get a big win. I feel like if we beat a team like Tennessee, that is huge for our momentum and a huge for our locker room to kind of really get bought back in. Because, you know, in all honesty, I hear a guy like Akeem Hicks talk about how he believes his team is elite, but they just need to be consistent. You know, whether our eyes pop to that quote or not, that's something that says that these guys in this locker room still buy in, whether they buy into the coaching or whether they buy into the fact that they know they have enough talent on this team to be able to win. A team like Tennessee can be a big start to that. Obviously, the offensive line is going to be the biggest question, you know, going into this, you know, how everyone's going to get started. Are we going to see Hambone get his first bit of NFL action? You know, are we going to see some guys get picked up off the practice squad?
We need to pray Cody Whitehair is healthy. I know he had a calf thing and they didn't want to rush him back, but I feel like, you know, he's been very sturdy throughout his career. And I feel like they kind of held him for, in case, you know, break in case of emergency, and it's time to break because there's an emergency.
And I think Cody is the type of guy that will fight to get on the field. You know what I mean? He's never come off as a guy like that will sit, you know, just to do it or just to be safe. He's a guy who wants to be out there with his boys, and he knows how the offensive line is. So I could definitely see Cody still trying to find a way on the field. Whether he finished as a game or not, that's up for discussion, but I don't know. He's a dog. Regardless, you know, we do have to look at our options on the practice squad. We have a guy in Aaron Neary who, you know, he played a year with the Rams, limited snaps. So that's kind of a toss up. And we have a rookie out at LSU. I'm about to butcher the hell out of his name, but Dara Terreau or I don't know how the fuck to say his name. He's 6'7", 320 pounds, and he played tackle at LSU. So that's essentially what we're working with. Obviously we didn't make a move at the deadline. I'm not going to beat that dead horse. So, yeah, man, we have limited options, but we're going to have to, we're going to see some new names out there. That's just kind of inevitable.
Yeah. And I'll give you credit for the name Butch, cause we were trying to say as a whole podcast on Irish on Tap earlier, the Clemson quarterback's name. And we just call him DJ Ukulele from here on out. It's like you and a Galele or something. I don't know. I mess it up, but yeah, we're definitely some name Butch guys over here. But I do think at the end of the day, I know we didn't expect guys like Arlington Hambright to be, you know, thrust into a prominent role at this point in the season, especially against a team like the Tennessee Titans, who we've talked about are a very tough team to beat at home. But this team, honestly, since that Buffalo game has gone all downhill. I don't think their offense is firing on the same level that they were earlier in the season. Obviously, like Lucas said, it is getting a little bit colder. It is the time of the year that Derrick Henry can really affect you, but there are also
Tractor Cito season.
There are also times though where you see Derrick Henry put up a dud. He's got 75 yards and no touchdowns, and the Titans weren't able to get him involved. We don't have a defense that I think. It's going to sound very homerish, but I don't think even a guy like Derrick Henry is going to go out and definitively have his way against this front seven. So either way, the ability for Ryan Tannehill to move with his legs and some of his passing stats, I remember they actually – I know I gave him a Mahomes reference last week, but there was a side-by-side that I saw, I think it was around week 6, and it just showed recent games between Mahomes and Tannehill, and they were in the same ballpark. So take that how you want. He was playing at a higher level at the beginning of the season. He does have quality receivers and guys like A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, Johnny Smith.
A.J. Brown's a fucking freak, dude.
Yeah. So
he really is. He has been battling injuries, though.
They're going to take a shot. They're going to take a shot on Jalen, though. So, I mean, could pencil that in for the first or second quarter, the shot on Jalen. And let's just hope we don't bite on that. And I really don't think that this is going to be a high scoring affair. I think it's going to be a nice, so a good old fashioned slobber knocker, like a nice little 17-13 type game where the Titans aren't able to really get their offense going. As much as I hate to say it for us, we're not able to really get too much going, because why would we believe anything else at this
point? But everyone scores on the Titans. Like, if this isn't a get-right game, when is it going to happen?
True.
When? Okay. Like, okay, so what? You're able to put up points on Minnesota? Like,
Minnesota.
They have fucking 13, you know, 13 out of 12 starters are rookies. Like, you know what I'm saying?
And, Minnesota even had a spirited effort against the Packers that kind of just popped off out of nowhere. So who the hell knows? You know, maybe they're hitting their stride at the wrong time, you know? And yeah, I really think you guys kind of hit on a lot of the points. Bedon, I really do agree with the fact that I don't think Derrick Henry will gash us. I think that doesn't mean he won't have a quality game. He doesn't mean he won't have over 100 yards and a touchdown or something like that.
Yeah, he said 75 yards. That's a bad game for Derrick Henry. That's like a fucking career game for David Montgomery at this point.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, and a name I really want to put out here, guy who's been dogged. He has been dogged. And you know what? You guys already know who the fuck I'm going to say. But I think Danny Trevathan's been playing some good football lately. And yeah. I think as far as in the run game, I think he could be huge asset in this Tennessee Titans game.
Bro, I fucking called off the dogs on Danny T on the post game because he played, it looked like he was fucking 2018 Danny Trevathan.
Dude, so last three games, I've loved what I've seen.
That's just part of what fan bases do. They get a narrative from week one or week two and they absolutely fucking run with it. We see it happen all the time. Danny Trevathan is back to form. He's not, you know, he's not fucking 26 anymore, but realistically, I'm not worried about him or really any part of the defense whatsoever. The only part of the defense I'm worried about is Chuck Pagano, because it just seems like you can't have this many all pros and let up so many yards. Like, I get the bend but don't break approach, but I feel like you're at the point where you can break other teams down and you're not taking advantage of certain situations. Like, everyone said that Vic Fangio was, like, you know, never aggressive. And I really think that at this point, Chuck Pagano, we see less blitzing from him, and it's very predictable. It's always on third down. Like, sometimes they're trying to, like, when's the last time we caught a quarterback in play action on a second, like a second and two, and we caught him on a fucking stunt with an inside linebacker and just absolutely murdered him in the backfield? Like, we need to be a little bit better situationally. Same thing with that drive they let up against the Saints. Like, I think realistically, the weakest link on this fucking defense is Chuck Pagano. Honest to God, because there's so much talent on it. And even last year, I felt like they were playing, like, they're playing at a high level, but they're not playing at the level that they should be playing. And there's no way that just the whole defense falls off a cliff in the same fucking year. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And, you know, I'll take this unpopular take, and I know it's an unpopular one. And I know that I've definitely have a lot more people saying that this take would be wrong compared to, you know, being right. But I think a lot of what goes into what's happening with Chuck Pagano and the way he's calling this defense is just the idea that we do not have a lot of confidence in that our offense can back up our aggressive defense.
Sevens. We can afford giving up threes. Yeah.
That's what I mean, dude. And I know that sucks. And it feels like an excuse, like me just saying it out loud, but it just seems like we're just handicapped at that. And, you know, to Chuck Pagano's credit, he's a head coach and he understands that his best chance at ever becoming like a head coach ever again is this team succeeding as a whole. So yeah, he could run a great defense. He's not going to get hired if the Bears finish 8-8 or 6-10, you know what I mean? Or something stupid like that. He understands that he has to almost manage the game, knowing that the offense probably isn't going to score a lot of points, and knowing that while it's going to suck, like, statistic wise for this defense giving up yardage, they know that they cannot give up points, Like you said, at the very worst, give up three, because we cannot afford to give up seven. Because how many Bears games we watched this year where just one touchdown just feels insanely deflating as a fan? You know what I mean?
It's tough because I feel like the defense gets over criticized. Like, I was listening to this one, I'm trying to think of where it came from, but it was like a voicemail on a podcast, and this guy was like, where are the sack numbers for Robert Quinn and Akeem Hicks and fucking Khalil Mack? And I'm just like, how can you watch the game and come away, like, how is that your take? Like, and I feel like it's because we put an unfair expectation on the defense, because we know we need them to play lights out in order to have a chance against most teams. And I think they're going to rise to the challenge. I think that that DNA, like you know, as cliche as it was for Matt Nagy to say, like, we have winners on this team. So a lot of guys that won a lot of games in college on that fucking defense. And they're definitely they don't take kindly to losing. I feel like they're
Danny T has a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, I feel like that they're going to rise to the occasion, and where, like, you could key in on Alvin Kamara. Alvin Kamara could still squeak out and whatever because he's quick and he gets to fucking max speed in 2 seconds. Derrick Henry takes a second to get up to full speed, and when he gets going, that motherfucker flies. But it takes him a second, so I feel like they're going to key in on him. But that also kind of gets me worried about guys like A.J. Brown and Corey Davis. Corey Davis is not, you know, he's a poor man's A.J. Brown. To me, they're a very similar skill set. But that's clearly what Mike Vrabel wants. He wants a tough football team. Mike Vrabel's team has a fucking identity. That's something that the Bears don't, at least not on offense. But no, realistically,
well, dude, I know he's still trying to cut off his meat if he wins a Super Bowl. Like,
I mean,
you know,
yeah,
that's a real thing.
He'll cut
dude,
his cock off. You don't
better care. Fucking happen, honestly. I want pictures
yeah,
and everything, man.
Put his meat on the table to a completely different. He's having a Vrabel schnitzel.
Yeah, realistically, we need to make a Vrabel t-shirt. No, but I just feel like they're going to key in on Derrick Henry and try to limit him as much as possible because realistically, everything works off of their play action. And that can get people to bite, but you just got to make – like, they don't have a ton of threats. Jonnu Smith's pretty good as well, but I feel like the Bears have actually had a really good time with tight ends this year. I don't feel like – I haven't seen, like – what was it, Mo Alie-Cox that maybe scored a touchdown on us, but I haven't seen, like, a ton of tight ends just rip us apart and stuff like that. So it doesn't really – oh, well, in the Rams game, actually. What was his name? Higbee, I think, had a couple of big catches. But either way, you really got to worry about A.J. Brown because this is the one thing that the Bears are susceptible to is a couple big plays. And A.J. Brown, if he takes – like, he's gone. Like, you're not going to – he's a tough guy to tackle one-on-one. And if you got Jalen Johnson matching up with him, like a rookie, we saw what fucking Golden Tate did to him. It might, or who was it, Golden Tate or was it, who was it in Detroit? No, it was Detroit game. Marvin Jones, who's not a big dude at all. Absolutely welcome Jalen Johnson to the NFL. So definitely need to limit the big plays, or at least if they do get the big play, get them down before they fucking score. You know what I mean? Like, and the Bears have been pretty good about that. Like we said, they've limited a ton of points. They're still top five in a lot of categories, but realistically they should, they have the potential to be number one overall. And it's just a little disappointing, you know?
Yeah. And honestly, like you guys said, I mean, the bend but don't break approach is kind of frustrating to see, and not seeing them make those splash plays, those pick sixes. I know sometimes they get called back, and more often than not this year that flag has been thrown real quick. But this defense has to get back to kind of the way that they were able to really flip a game on its head like they did in 2018. And I think that if they were able to do that, that could have been the difference in a game like last week or even the Rams game. We talked about it a little bit where a couple different things go our way and that Eddie Jackson scoop and score is a completely different moment in that game. So I feel this team needs to be more opportunistic. They need to play better complementary football, and they need to just go out there and just find a way to win. We cannot afford to drop our third game in a row. The rest of the NFC does. Well, I do think the AFC is superior this year. I do think the NFC race is a lot tighter. And I feel like every game is magnified that much more. And especially if we have the opportunity to play these teams. And like Lucas, you said, two of the teams that are ahead of us right now in the quote unquote wild card race are teams that we just lost to. And the division is still right there for the taking, being one game back from the Packers. But we cannot afford to look ahead. We need to go 1-0 every week, and that starts this week in Nashville.
Yeah, I don't want to be too negative because realistically, when you looked at our schedule at the beginning of the year, you were looking at the first quarter and you were like, we have to go 4-0 or 3-1 because it gets really tough in the second quarter of the season. We are in that quarter of the season right now. If you told us at the beginning of the year that the Bears were 5-3, after that Saints game, we would be pretty satisfied with it. So I don't want to act like the fucking world is over and it's all ending and stuff like that, because it lightens up. We get Jacksonville. We get Houston. We get Minnesota twice. We get Detroit again. Even though Minnesota looks like they're trending upwards, we've still had their number. Like Kirk Cousins just fears Akeem Hicks to a whole nother level and Khalil Mack. So it's like Dalvin Cook has not had success against the Chicago Bears. And Kirk Cousins, when you put the game on his fucking shoulders, it's impossible. I know we just saw the fucking Vikings throttle the Packers, but the Vikings did literally the exact same formula that the San Francisco 49ers gave. And I've said this on multiple accounts. The Packers defense is actually worse, but they're seeing less rush attempts because Aaron Rodgers is throwing fucking four touchdowns in the first quarter. When that doesn't happen, the game's complexion could look a lot different. So I'm not saying that gives us a good matchup because the Bears don't run outside zone. But I mean, if you look at that game last week, like Minnesota pretty much handled them the whole time. They had a chance at the end, but Minnesota was in control of that game. And I mean, yeah, realistically, when you look at it, the Bears schedule lightens up. There's no doubt they should make the playoffs. Like they are in the driver's seat.
We still play the Jacksonville Jaguars at some point.
That's what I'm saying. The Jaguars and the Texans too. Like we're going at this point after the Titans, we're through the really hard part of our schedule.
Can I also make a point that the Green Bay Packers don't have a fucking middle linebacker? Like we complain about Danny T as like our de facto number two linebacker. Like he would easily walk in and be the best like fucking linebacker in that room.
Without
they out there playing in a 4-2-4, bro.
Dude, like exactly. Like they are trying to like capitalize on the big bodies they have like on the front line because they have no inside linebacker. Meanwhile, Blake Martinez for the New York Giants just absolutely fucking balling.
Playing 99% of the snaps. Dude, I went up against Dalvin Cook in two leagues, and aside from the Bears losing and my fantasy teams just getting ran off the field by one guy, it was a decent Sunday. I think I ate my body weight in nachos and maybe other fat people foods, but yeah, it was like a stress eating day, bro. Cause like, you know how Spice always drops the four quarter reaction. Cause the Bears game's never consistent. It's like every single emotion that you could possibly go through in a Bears game, you know, you're happy or you're sad, you're crazy. And then you're standing in the middle of a bar with your hat flipped upside down with a bunch of other grown men that you don't know, just hoping that Will Lutz, like you're like, you're doing the side thing, trying to put the air on the field goal. Like the Bears need to go out. And this is going to be one of my final points. The Bears need to go out and they need to dominate the way the Bengals just dominated the Titans.
100%. Because
if the Bengals can do it with Joe Burrow, and he is a great quarterback, but the weapons they have around him are not all the way there yet. They have some good young receivers. I don't really trust their running game the way it should be.
They had four offensive linemen that were not on their roster.
Positive, right?
Starting. No, that's what I'm saying. They had four offensive linemen that they picked up off the streets starting, and they gave up no sacks.
If I mean, don't Nick get me Foles wrong. The Bengals, four the times, Bengals have played a lot of close games. They tied the Eagles, which was a good game. They played against the Browns. I don't think they really were as close as the score indicated. But
yeah, I get it. I'm saying that the fucking Joe Burrow has been getting murdered every single week. Oh, yeah.
He's the highest sack quarterback.
And he didn't get touched by the Titans last week. So I don't care who the fuck the Bears trot out. If Nick Foles cannot get sacked more than one time, they are not able to get after the fucking pass.
Are you advocating for Tyler Bray season?
Oh my God.
No, you have the fucking Big Mitchie back.
By the way, Jadeveon Clowney, insanely overrated.
Yeah, I mean, he's great at stopping the run, I guess, or at least he made one sick fucking tackle. He
bitched and moaned for his 15 mil just to do nothing with it.
No, but realistically, you know, there are some some decent players, especially on the back end over there. So they can fucking pick the ball off. Nick Foles will probably throw another one pedaling backwards off his back foot. But realistically, you know, that's about it for our soft preview. We will be into a lot more detailed one in a couple of days. It'll be coming out Friday night. Yeah, Friday night we'll have the X's and O's and the injury report for you. We are Bears on Tap. Go ahead and follow us at Bears on Tap. Also follow On Tap Sportsnet for all of your Chicago sports needs. I'm Lucas Perfetti. You can follow me at LucasPerfetti46. Joined alongside by Duke Coughlin at That Pod Guy Duke and Brandon Suarez at BeatOn300. We appreciate you guys for listening. Stay safe out there, everybody, and bear down.
Bear down.
Bear down.